Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the morning show right here at 88.5 KRFY. It is Wednesday, April 18th, and you have tuned in to Local Decision 2018 Primary. And I'm one of your hosts this morning, Susie Prez.
And I'm your co-host over here, Susie, Chris Bessler. How are you doing this morning?
Fine. It's very strange. You're sitting next to me instead of across from me, but that's okay because we have three guests in the studio who are running for the District 1 Senate seats. And do you want to introduce them, Chris?
Yes, this is the seat that's held by Sean Keogh. She's retiring this year. And the three Republican candidates that'll be on the Republican ballot we have in this morning are Danielle Ahrens. Danielle, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
As well as Scott Herndon.
And thank you, Chris. Thanks for having us.
And Jim Woodward.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thanks to KRFY and all the supporters.
And we're going to come back with a bunch of questions and opportunity for you guys to introduce yourselves to the listeners and the voters out there. But first, Susie, it's kind of a beautiful day out there, so maybe we should hear about the weather.
It's so beautiful. Right now, it's still saying it's 32 degrees. And like Scott Herndon said, there was ice on the windows this morning, but I don't think we'll have that too much longer in the weeks ahead. So currently 32 degrees from the National Weather Service. High today, 50. Patchy fog in the morning, but then mostly cloudy. But I have a feeling it's going to be mostly sunny. And tonight, decreasing clouds, low of 34. And here's the good news coming up, mostly sunny. On Thursday, high of 57. Still cold, clear night, so low of 35 on Thursday night. And Friday, high of 59. I'm not going to go too much further because I think the good weather is here for pretty much. We'll still have some spring showers, but here we go into beautiful sunny days.
Yeah, and other things happening outside. Sunrise rose this morning at 5:52 a.m. It'll set tonight at 7:40 p.m. That means as we're still getting longer days over the course of the last week, we've gained 24 minutes of daylight per day. That contributes to that feeling of sunshine out there, having these nice longer days now. Up in the skies, there's an interesting thing happening Sunday and Monday. The Lyrids meteor shower is going to come by. It's not a big meteor shower as they go around here, but you might see some falling stars if you get out. The best viewing will be after midnight. That's Sunday or Monday this week, so that's something to check out. There's, of course, a lot of things going on around town. There's the second week of Shrek the Musical. I heard that's great that the high school kids are putting on. And a ton of other things, events happening around town that we'd normally go into. But we're going to say go check it out on the website, KRFY.org, where we have the complete community calendar. And I think with that, we want to get into...
I just want to say one thing I'm very excited about. We have more interviews all the rest of the week. We actually have Thursday morning and Friday morning, 8 o'clock interviews. But at 4 o'clock on Friday, I'll be here in the studio with our very own Holly McGarry. She'll have her guitar in her hands. She'll be playing some tunes, and she'll be talking to us about her professional music career. She's a local gal who grew up here in Sandpoint and is... an awesome musician. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's 4 o'clock on Friday.
And I guess we'll mention one other thing is that we are doing every Wednesday, we're doing interviews with candidates that will be on the ballot in on the May 15th primary. And next Wednesday, we're going to have in the Bonner County Assessor Republican candidates, Dennis Englehart, Donna Gao, and Richard Miller. So you'll want to tune back for that. We'll be talking to commissioner candidates the two Wednesdays after that. And also on Friday, we're going to be airing a interview with Heather Scott, who is running for the District 1 House Seat A. We've already interviewed Mike Beck last Wednesday. And with that, let's get onto today's slate here. We have again with us the State Senate District 1 Republican candidates. That's the seat held by Sean Keogh. She's retiring. We're going to go by the alphabet to start with. So Danielle, you're up first. We're going to give each of you about a minute and a half, 2 minutes just to introduce yourself to folks and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. Hi, my name's Danielle Ahrens, and thank you very much for tuning in to listen to us today. I'm running for the Senate, District 1, and If you want effective experienced leadership, I'm the one you want to choose. I've spent thousands of hours working down in the House of Representatives and also down in the Senate as a volunteer, developing myself for this job and learning it. I'm very, very active in your local community. I'm on the board of directors for Life Choices Pregnancy Center, Bonner County Farm Bureau, and also Sandpoint Community Resource Center. I'm also a member of the local Kiwanis and Community Assistance League. One thing that's very important to me is serving others in my community and bringing the voice of North Idaho down and representing you well down in Boise. I'm your Legislative District 1 Republican Chairman, and this is what I do full-time. It's my hometown mission to serve my constituents and go out and find out what your needs are and try to help you solve your problems. I'm a retired deputy sheriff and also a correctional officer, and I'm a grandmother and a mother. Just really enjoy living here in this state. My family came here in the 1800s, and so this is a love of mine, living in this area and farming and raising my family here. So I hope that you'd vote for me May 15th, Danielle Aarons for Senate. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. So Scott Herndon, same 2 minutes or a minute and a half or so to you to introduce yourself.
Okay, you bet. Thank you. So I am Scott Herndon, and my wife Arlene and our 8 children live in Sagal, Idaho, and we've lived here since 2004. My wife and I actually met in San Francisco, and we were actually some of those folks, like a lot of others around here, who moved up from California. Very happy to have found it. My twin brother Paul runs Pleasant Meadow Creamery, which is a raw milk dairy, and they sell at Winter Ridge. And he's actually the one, he's my identical twin, and he's the one who actually discovered the Sandpoint area, bought some land in the Selly Valley, and said, Scott, you ought to go check it out. So we did, and I'm a home builder now, but before we moved up here, when I was in San Francisco, I worked for Charles Schwab, and then I actually worked at UC Berkeley, and I did PeopleSoft Financial Systems, which are large finance systems. I have a degree from Arizona State University. My wife actually graduated from UC Berkeley with a degree in business, so we have kind of an interesting background. I have that finance background. Right now I'm a home builder. We employ several guys locally in home building. We've been doing that since 2005. I used to be a jail chaplain from 2008 through 2013. Some people may have seen me in the paper years ago when I had to sue Bonner County for a First Amendment violation as a jail chaplain when I wrote a letter on behalf of an inmate. And the sheriff at the time told me that I couldn't do that, so I wanted to preserve that First Amendment right for all chaplains going forward. And so basically, that's just an interest of mine, is paying attention to the Constitution and fighting on behalf of it for all our constituents.
Thank you, Scott. And to you, Jim Woodward, same question. Tell us a bit about yourself and about a minute and a half.
Certainly. I'm a Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry boy. I grew up here in Sandpoint in, early on, the Pine Street Bakery. That was our house back in the 70s. We moved on up to Bonner's Ferry. My dad was a city engineer and administrator up there. So I grew up there and graduated from high school there. Went to the University of Idaho and got an engineering degree. And not long after we graduated there, then also married my wife, Brenda Woodward, who's probably better known around the town than I am. She's the sells baked goods at the farmer's market, and my father-in-law there is the corn man. And my wife also teaches at Lake Pondre High School and has been involved in the school district since we've been back here in Sandpoint as the volunteer coordinator, and then and now at LPO High School. After my time at the University of Idaho, Brenda and I got married. I was on into the Navy submarine nuclear power training pipeline, so I spent some time in Orlando, Florida, down at the Idaho National Laboratory here in Idaho, and on out to the fleet, where I served on a ballistic missile submarine. I'd had a 21-year career in the Navy. About one-third of that was active service, and the remainder reserve service after we came back here. Actually made it back to North Idaho in 2000, and the events of 9/11 occurred, and so I was back into active service after that for a year, and then came back here and have been here working heavy construction, originally for C.E. Kramer, and then with my own company since 2008. If you look around town, some of the projects we've done down in Sand Creek, the boardwalk down in Sand Creek, we did that. I And we've also done some volunteer projects. If you look around too, actually you can't look around. We tore down Memorial Field as a volunteer project a few years ago, and so there, not our part's not there. I currently serve as a board director at Northern Lights, a fire district commissioner in Sagal Fire District, and a few other activities around town.
Well, thank you to our three candidates for District 1 Senate seat. And we're going to move on to some of the issues. First, we'd like you to describe the top 3 to 5 issues you believe are most important, why you believe they are important, that's a funny word, and your position on these issues. And how should we do this, Chris? Who should? Okay, we'll start with Scott Herndon.
So 3 to 5 issues. I think the number one is just government tends to get too big and it goes into unconstitutional directions. So, for example, recently we had an interaction with CPS, and I know that's an issue that a lot of families in Idaho care about, when we have government agencies that basically ignore the Constitution, and CPS does do that as a standard practice, and they'll come in and want to violate 4th and 14th Amendments, for example, anytime they have a referral. So
we should clarify, that's Child Protective Services?
Yeah, Child Protective mm-hmm. Services and the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. So if I say that's a top issue, what I mean is we want to look at the Constitution as state legislators, and we actually want to rein in a government that goes into areas where the Constitution's supposed to protect all of us. So I'd say that's a number one issue. A number two issue would be what I call state sovereignty. It's constitutional. We have the federal 10th Amendment, and then we have our own Idaho Constitution. And the states were meant to be a little bit different, one from the other. And so I'd say that we've gotten into a habit of just doing everything that the federal government says, even when it doesn't really conform to neither the federal Constitution nor the state Constitution. And usually when we do that, it costs us a whole lot of money. More money out of our own pockets in the form of income taxes, sales taxes. We have some of the highest taxes compared to states that are around us. So I would say that we'd want to basically implement a little bit more state sovereignty, depart from federal government, expensive mandates, lower taxes on all of us so we can all benefit. And then for local issues, I think the smelter's a really big one, especially here in town and those of us who are downwind of the Newport proposed silicon smelter. And there's a lot of interest in that right now. And as a state legislature, we don't have a voice in that right now, but I want to see Idaho actually get a voice at the table for the smelter project, because we're the ones immediately downwind that are going to be affected by that. So that's going to be a big issue for us here locally. Another one on the ballot coming up pretty soon is, of course, the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. And I love the idea of public wilderness areas. However, I want to actually, looking at the Constitution, I kind of want a fair and level playing field versus the eastern states. They used to have a lot of federally managed land in the eastern states, and we're supposed to be on an equal footing with them. And if we have publicly managed lands, I would like to see that managed locally. So I want to see that under state control rather than federal control.
Okay, thank you, Scott Herndon. Jim Woodward, same question to you, the top 3 to 5 issues that you think are most important that are kind of animating your campaign. And actually, you have about 2.5 minutes.
My focus is the business of state government, taking care of the day-to-day items that all have to happen and that are the proper role of state government. Education is right to the top for me. I've been told that $1 spent in education is equivalent to $7 to $10 in the correctional system. So I think we make that investment up front and we end up with better people and a society that works better. Transportation and our infrastructure through the state to have that in place where businesses can operate, creating a conducive business environment, and not only in having the infrastructure in place, but also the regulations and not having too much or not being too restrictive. So education and transportation are both key to me. And then, of course, maintaining our rights here in Idaho. We all are here and enjoy Idaho because we can live, respect one another, yet at the same time have a little bit of space and determine our own path.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim Woodward. And Danielle Ahrens, the same question. Do you want me to repeat it at all?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the top 3 to 5 issues you believe are most important, and why you believe they are and your position on the issues.
Well, top 3 to 5 issues in this District 1 area. Number one is our roads. Our roads are in very poor shape, and that impedes all of us no matter what we're doing. We still have a slide just north of us going into Bonner's Ferry that slows us down to one lane. Having proper repair of our roads up here is critical, particularly with our weather-related incidents. We have to get more road repairs and road funding up here. What happens down there when you go down to Boise is not a lot of the funds get up here to repair our roads. And so that's one of the things I want to make sure is that I bring the voice of North Idaho down there and make sure that they understand our needs up here, because they have a very different geographical and economical area. The next issue would be career technical education. Our kids have to have marketable skills when they get out of their high schools. They need to have that career education in place. This gives our kids more chances. It keeps our families here in town, strengthening our economy and our area up here in the Panhandle. And the third issue would be jobs. We have to have a friendly environment for manufacturing and business, because we need to be able to support our area and provide living wages and a good environment for all of us to live and work and enjoy our area and keep our area clean and friendly to all of us.
Thank you, Danielle. So let's get on to some of the issues. Some of you guys have mentioned a couple of these, but we'll swing back around on them. And the first question will go to you, Jim Woodward. The economy and job creation are issues of concern that a perennial concern, I'd say, to our region's residents. Do you think this is an issue that legislators should deal with? And if so, what specific actions would you advocate to improve our economy and jobs?
I think in the construction industry, everybody knows right now we're running really hard and strong. I've lost a few employees in the last few weeks because they were offered more elsewhere. So it's actually a competitive environment right now to maintain or to keep your employees or to hire new for certainly is hard to do. So what the state can do is make sure that we're not over-regulating and not putting too much in place that's restrictive. And then also monitoring our revenues at the state level to make sure that we're in line. Because as the economy is so strong right now, the state revenue is higher than budgeted. And so we have to make sure we're taking a hard look at that. I think that was taken care of well this year. There was a balance between some extra expenses in infrastructure along with a tax cut and then still putting money back in the rainy day funds. I think the state does a great job here in Idaho with the balanced budget and acting in a fiscally responsible manner to have rainy day fund. So what do I look for the legislature to do is to make sure we don't start to encumber the businesses. And right now we know we're running strong right now, but that won't always be the case. And so we prepare for the times we're not. I do believe in a free market. I believe people perform better when they are working for themselves. And I know that of myself, and I know that from the observations of others, that competition and the ability to go out and make yourself better is the way that most the people achieve the most.
Okay. Thank you, Jim Woodward. Same question to you, Danielle Ahrens. The economy and job creation are issues of concern that have been identified by many region's residents. Do you consider this an important issue for legislators to deal with, and what specific actions would you advocate or support to improve our economy and provide good jobs?
Absolutely. It's vital to have a good business environment. As a state senator, not only do I currently, but would go around and talk to different businesses, find out their concerns, their needs, try to address those, and also seek out businesses to come in here that would be a good fit for our community. So absolutely, as a legislator, you should be an advocate for your area and make sure that the business environment's conducive to them and to your citizens.
Okay, thank you. Scott Herndon, same question to you on economy and job creation. Do you think that's an issue that legislators should even deal with? And if so, how should they deal with it? What sorts of actions should legislators take?
So I do think the legislature has a role in the economy. For the most part, I think the economy operates on free market principles. But things that we can do to always be in a position to help our economy is make sure that in our education system, that which we are constitutionally mandated to fund, and of course we want well-educated people, is right now, as Jim mentioned, we need more people in the trades and construction in particular. So we need to have attention to that in our education system. I also think technological training in our education system is a great area where we can grow people's prosperity and the economic climate. And that means that technical education, and one of the things the state legislature can do is we provide, obviously, as Danielle mentioned, for the roads and road maintenance, but there's also the information superhighway that is not as visible. But these days, we know a lot of people in our district that are making a living over the internet, and that's where they're marketing their products. So we want to make sure that we have good information superhighway. And any way the government can facilitate that, less regulation, funding for that, I think, is okay. And then also we want to teach entrepreneurship, because I've lived in a lot of small towns, and we want to actually educate people as to how to run their own businesses. Besides that, I think just lower taxes and lower regulation. Basically, you get government out of the way as far as the cost side and the regulatory side, and I think that helps local businesses.
Thank you, Scott Herndon. I just want to remind our listeners, this is The Morning Show here at 88.5 KRFY, and thanks for tuning in. We're speaking with our Senate candidates for District 1, and we're talking about many issues that face Idaho. And we're going to move on to education, and we're going to start with Danielle. The state's budget for education was cut back drastically in 2009 due to the recession. As the economy has improved, the legislature has increased school funding. Do you favor or oppose increased funding for education? If you support increased funding, how should the state pay for it?
I think right now, looking at the budget, where 65% of our budget is going to education, it's not a factor of how much money is going, it's how it's allocated. So we have a lot of different programs that are drawing off of that education funding. And I would take a hard look at how that's being allocated and change the allocations.
Do you have any suggestions for some of those changes at this point?
The thing that I would like to see more money going into is career technical education, because education's not a one-size-fits-all. There's a lot of emphasis on going on to college when that's not a fit for many kids. And so we need to have more options for kids. There's a lot of different needs for a lot of different families. And so that option needs to be there for parents and kids.
Thank you. And Scott Herndon, the same question. Do you want me to repeat it?
No, I've got okay. That. Thanks, Susie. So in education, again, we are constitutionally mandated to fund it. I think where we sometimes err in education, and the Albertson Foundation did a study of Idahoans and found that there's a great dissatisfaction with our public education system. Below 50% of people are not satisfied. And it's, but however, our performance, when you rate it compared to other states, we just had released our Idaho student performance, and we actually exceed the national performance levels, but we are on the lower end of the funding scale. So what that tells you is that it's not a funding issue, because our students are performing, but I think we can do better when we get into more school choice. So that dissatisfaction with our present schools, that same survey also found great satisfaction with charter schools. So you take public money and you allow for more charter school experiences. And the thing that the charter schools do differently is they don't try to fit everybody in the same curriculum box. They recognize the differences in individuals, and they tailor their education to those individuals. There's also more parental involvement. And when there's more parental involvement, everybody's usually more satisfied and students perform at a higher level. So I think we need to encourage more charter schools and more school choice. And I think that's what's going to improve even more our educational performance in Idaho.
Okay, thank you. When you're talking about charter schools, just to clarify a little bit, aren't those mandated or kind of licensed by the public school?
They are. And so it's a public school controlled issue. So, but it's, do we want to put everybody into the one box of the big public school, or do we want, for example, one of the advantages a charter school offers is a smaller class size. And so basically by splitting up your student population into smaller segments at different locations and having a different curriculum, it seems to enhance the performance of our students and gives a totally different educational experience. But it's in the public school umbrella.
Okay, thank you. And Jim Woodward, the same question.
Well, my goal going into this and placing an emphasis on education is that we can figure out a stable funding mechanism for the schools. Right now, we've dropped into this cycle, almost a vicious cycle of maintenance and operation levies every 2 years. That didn't happen when I was growing up here, but because we had the federal grounds, we pulled more timber off the federal grounds at that point in time. We actually harvest more timber here now than we used to, but it's coming off company ground like Hancock, Mulpus, and then also smaller private landowners. Anyhow, that paradigm is gone that we have the revenue from federal timber sales. And so we've gotten into this point where the school, the people running the school districts every 2 years don't know if they're going to have a substantial cut. It creates uncertainty for teachers. It creates a real challenge for someone trying to set a budget. It's just not working right now. So I think we need to step back and take a look and say, how do we put a stable funding mechanism in place and so that that budget is more flatline? As a small business owner, if I had to cut my budget by a third on one day and go into the next cycle, it's just not a manageable situation. So I'll look to solve that problem, but not by myself, of course. There are 105 people down there, along with the superintendent of public instruction, plus all the great people working in the district here. I say about education, teachers are key. We want to have nice facilities for the students, safe facilities and efficient facilities. But in education, that bond between teacher and student is always what drives the success. I spent a year as an exchange student in Germany after high school. The building was more than 200 years old. The teachers were great. And that was the connection there. So placing the emphasis on our educational system and making sure we're taking care of those teachers so that they take care of our kids.
Okay. Thank you, Jim Woodward. Next question for our state Senate candidates. We want to talk about health care now. The Affordable Care Act is in place, and Idahoans actually signed up at one of the highest per capita rates in the country. But one provision in the law permits states to expand Medicaid to cover an estimated 60 to 80,000 Idahoans who make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to be eligible for subsidies on the state insurance exchange. Lawmakers have discussed for several sessions now about how to handle this, and they haven't come up with a solution. What action, if any, do you favor to cover this health care coverage gap for lower-income Idahoans? And I think, Scott Herndon, you're the first up on this one.
Okay, so I think the health care system is broken in the cost structure. So when government gets too involved, and government is the primary payer of direct medical services. So, for example, the Idaho budget is $7.4 billion. We get 35% of our budget funded by the federal government, and $1.8 billion of that, so a very significant portion of the Idaho budget, goes to pay for direct medical services and provision for Idahoans. One of the problems with that is when you have that kind of a payer system, the government is notorious for $640 toilet seats. Not saying that's what we're paying in Idaho for a toilet seat, but when you have that large payer system, then you end up losing competition and pricing somehow gets out of whack. So right now in America, we are paying $10,000 per person for medical care. We're the most expensive per person healthcare system in the entire world as far as the nation goes. And so I think the problem and the reason there's an affordability problem, so the Affordable Care Act, somehow we actually end up paying more for medical care. And so it didn't really work out that it was more affordable. And I think the problem is too much government intervention is why we end up with unaffordable health care. So I think what the legislature can do is help steer us toward a more independent solution, meaning let's not take all of the Affordable Health Care Act provisions and let's find ways to tailor our system, and this is a little exercise of state sovereignty, to benefit Idahoans and lower the cost structure for Idahoans by rejecting national solutions that cause higher prices.
So as pertains to the Medicaid gap itself, that would that be your solution, that we should just try to make a system-wide thing that would lower costs?
Right. Remember, that gap is there because they make too much money, but they don't fit into the coverage for the provision for Medicaid. And so the problem is a problem of cost, right? So they can't afford it, so they need subsidies. And I think if we lower the overall cost, then we lower the insurance rates as well when you lower the overall cost. And I think that's how you fit them in. So it's basically getting back to free market capitalism in order to get them in, rather than expanding government payments and government coverage.
Okay. A follow-up question on this, I'll put it to you right now, is there is an initiative drive underway. It's actually being headed up by Luke Mayfield. He's a Sandpoint High School graduate, but it's a statewide initiative drive to put a vote on the November ballot that would require Medicaid expansion. Do you favor or oppose the initiative to put the question on the ballot?
I certainly don't oppose putting anything on the ballot. So if they can make the ballot and then we get a vote up and down, up or down by Idahoans, I always think that's great for the democratic process.
Okay, thank you. Jim Woodward, your turn on the healthcare question here. Again, the question is, how should the state deal with the Medicaid gap? Should the state expand Medicaid to cover the estimated 60,000 to 80,000 Idahoans who make too much to qualify for Medicaid but not enough to be eligible for subsidies?
Well, there are two ways to go at that, Chris, or actually a lot more than two ways, but that gap exists. For anyone who's making 100% of the federal poverty level or lower, they're eligible for Medicaid. Someone making 138% of the federal poverty level or up to 400% receives a tax, not a credit, but actually money up front to pay for health care. So that 38% gap just came about because of that Supreme Court decision after Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act was passed. So we're dealing with a glitch because of Medicare expansion would have happened automatically, but it didn't because of that court case. So to close that 38%, those people in that gap, one easy way to go after that is at the federal level to just drop that 138 down to 100. The gap's closed up, and then you can receive Affordable Care Act supplements just like anybody from 138 to 400%. So I would like to see it go that way. I thought we had some good Idaho solutions that this last legislative session that didn't make it through, those waivers we were requesting. I think it was a 1352 and 11 something. Spent a fair amount of time looking at this, talking to insurance representatives here in the state, and talking with actually had a conversation with the director of the insurance department. And so there are lots of different solutions. I guess, and so to answer your question directly, should we put it on the ballot? Let's go ahead and do that. Do I feel that that's the right answer? I still have my beliefs in life that what I alluded to a few minutes ago, that when people are taking care of themselves, they do it in a better job. They do a better job and it's more efficient. Accountability becomes an issue. I've seen it time and again where people, government systems, there's less accountability. And so people do sometimes tend to abuse those, and I try to avoid those. As a legislature, I would try to avoid that.
Thank you, Jim Woodward. Final question to you now. Well, not the final question, but the final on this topic. Danielle Ahrens on the Medicaid gap and the estimated 60,000 to 80,000 Idahoans that make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to be eligible for subsidies. How do you think the state should deal with that?
Well, watching the state wrestling with this for the last several years, there's been multiple solutions that have come up, but people still can't agree on it. Overall, I oppose Medicaid expansion. I think there's way too much government involvement in healthcare, and it just keeps driving the costs up. So I would oppose that, and I would look at those committees and try to be on those committees so that we do reach a solution for this.
on the follow-up question, on the initiative, would you use a support or oppose putting the question on the November ballot on the Medicaid expansion?
I always support these processes. That's what a representative republic is about. So I support the initiative processes.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on to public lands. And I just want to remind our listeners again, this is Local Decision 2018, the morning show dedicated to our candidates that are running in the primary this year. And right now we have Scott Herndon, Danielle Ahrens, and Jim Woodward, who are running for the Senate District 1. Public lands, there's an active movement within Idaho promoting a transfer of federal lands to state control. Do you favor or oppose this effort? And I might as well throw in, do you favor or oppose the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness? Two-part question. We're going to start with Jim Woodward.
I still say we're the United States of America, and that land that we have here in Idaho was belonged to the federal government. It was part of the Oregon Territory. At statehood, the condition of statehood was that we were so much a certain amount of land was transferred over into private ownership, and the rest of that land has always been under federal control. So the argument, let's take back our federal lands, it doesn't. I don't think it rings true that it's always been federal lands. And as a country, as the United States, we can afford to have that land there. I do see that we'd like to more efficiently operate that. We've had this swing in the timber industry where we probably over-harvested in the 60s and 70s, and then now we've gone through a period of time where we've gotten too conservative and too safe, and we're not managing those assets properly. But I still believe they're federal assets. But I do agree with local control, and that means bringing those decision points closer to town, but that the federal agency is the Forest Service is easy to engage, and we can have those discussions and have that land owned by the federal government. But for example, with the Good Neighbor Authority that we have in place going on right now, that's that program that's funded out of the Farm Bill, and the Idaho Department of Lands is efficiently managing timber sales on federal ground. So we're getting back to harvesting timber off the federal grounds. So no, I don't think that trying to take over the federal grounds in here in Idaho is the right answer.
And what about Scotchman Peaks? Do you favor or oppose that?
As there is no proposal on the table right now. We have the advisory vote in place, and so I definitely want to see what the community thinks. I know a lot of people here. I've lived here a long time, and I can't get a feel for where the balance is. I'm really looking forward to that. Now, myself, that last proposal, I thought that there were some items there that needed to be taken care of before I'd be ready to say yes on that. But preserving Scotchman is a great idea. I think that we'll look back on that in life and say that what a wonderful piece, and I'm glad that our kids and grandkids can go there. We just have those concerns that the wilderness bill doesn't have to be boilerplate out of 1964 Wilderness Act. So we have airstrips in the Frank Church Wilderness, and we have jet boats in Hell's Canyon. We can make those specific accommodations and make sure that people in Clark Fork are taken care of, wildlife and wildfire management taken care of also.
Thank you, Jim Woodward. And Danielle Ahrens, the same question. States taking over federal lands and the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness question.
Well, if we look at states east of Mississippi, for example, New York, I believe it's 0.25% of their land is in the federal control. And out here in Idaho, it's 64%. And this is where we're having problems with funding our schools and our infrastructure. We don't have access to the same lands, taxes, resources, and management that other states do. So it makes us a beggar state. We're constantly looking for federal funds to help fund our programs. So I do favor state management of these federal lands. We can manage them better. Particularly, you look at state lands versus federal lands just for fire safety. The state does a much better job of managing these lands. As far as Scotchman's Peak, I oppose wilderness areas because to me, they lock people out of their lands. They lock out the handicapped. They impinge on the culture, traditions, and heritage of the local people, and I don't agree with locking lands up in perpetuity. So, thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. And Scott Herndon, same question.
Okay, so there are about 63% of Idaho is managed by the federal government as far as the lands. Most of that, 39%, is managed by the U.S. Forest Service. And I think the problem with federal control, the federal government in a 1976 act of Congress, it's their position that they're not going to transfer lands to the states in the West. So we're up against a Congress that we know it's a do-nothing Congress, and so it's not likely that we're going to get them to actually capitulate and sell land control to us or the lands themselves. If you look at deeds and titles, if they possess deeds and titles, I think the goal would be the federal government does things very poorly, and so they lose per dollar invested per acre, they lose money. Versus state control, we make money for every dollar per acre. So the actual statistic is they lose 27 cents an acre and we make about $15 an acre. So somehow local and state control is more prosperous for the Idaho economy when we can control lands. As far as the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, I actually like the idea of set aside areas, but I prefer that to be under state management. And so I don't like locking up an area under federal control for perpetuity, which literally means for generation after generation after generation, because what if Idahoans in this area want to change their mind in 100 years? We've locked them out of changing their mind. So I'm against the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness designation on the federal level.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to stay on the kind of a question on environment here. This actually came to us from a listener named Jane. And I believe, Danielle, you're up first on this one. Many states, including adjacent Oregon and Washington, have established or started to work on climate change adaptation plans to cope with the effects that we're seeing from climate change, such as forest health, increased wildfires, stressed cold water fisheries, impacts on agriculture, even potential impacts on ski areas, recreational providers. Idaho has not yet written a climate adaptation plan. Should Idaho be preparing a plan to deal with climate change? And where do you stand? Would you help that kind of process?
No, I don't agree with the climate change theory. So I don't agree with the premise of that question.
Okay. Same question to you, Scott. Do you think Idaho should be working on a plan to deal with climate change impacts that we're seeing?
Well, as a state legislature, I think we should always pay attention to science. So if there were nonprofits in the state that are actually looking at science and they come up with predictors, for example, let's say that they can prove through the scientific theory that we would have flooding in a certain area because of legitimate climate change, then I think if there's something that the state government needs to do to help mitigate that possibility after it's been scientifically proven, then of course I think we should look at that. That's something that a local government should be concerned with. That's something that the state government should be concerned with. But I would say that we'd only want to take action and spend a lot of money at the state level if it's scientifically proven that there's an actual threat to a particular area economically or in some other way.
Do you think we've been seeing impacts on things like forest health or fisheries at this point from climate change?
There's so many things. I just went recently to a meeting with IDFG, and they were talking, it was this annual State of the Lake meeting. And I'm not sure that climate change was implicated at all in the change of the fisheries. It seems to me like it's more, for example, the walleye coming in to the lake is having an impact on the kokanee. And so I think there's a whole lot of other things that impact the fisheries. And I'm not sure that I can say that, and as well as forest health, there's a whole lot of things, beetles, et cetera, forest fires, lack of poor management by the federal control that impact the forest. And I'm not sure that we've identified that there's a specific climate change mechanism that does that.
Okay. Jim Woodward, same question to you. Should the state be preparing for potential impacts on our forests and fisheries and agriculture from climate change?
Like I told you, I'm an engineer by background or engineer by education. My wife's a chemist, so we have discussions on this. Her as a scientist. And, there's no denying that CO2 concentration in the atmosphere is up and is tracked with the Industrial Revolution and the Industrial Age. So I think it's almost pretty hard to deny at this point that man, with what, 7.6 billion of us on the face of the earth, that we're having some effect here. In Idaho, I think we are making steps forward, and across the countries, I don't know if the legislature has to try and mandate something there. Right now, there's an electric vehicle grid being planned, so you'll be able to drive throughout the state from east to west and north to south with electric charging stations. That's the result of the Volkswagen settlement, so I know that's underway. We're shifting our energy balance. We have more and more renewable energy sources. The challenge there is in operating an electric grid that solar and wind often die off at night. Solar obviously dies off at night, and wind does too, to a lesser extent. And so we have this energy grid that, where it was traditionally fossil fuel powered, we're shifting and we're making progress. So I do see progress. Let's watch it from the legislature, and if we have to take action, maybe. But I don't, like always, I think that just setting up the guidelines, not setting up mandates, let's encourage doing the right thing. But the energy market here in the Northwest is interesting. We have the hydropower that we're trying to balance that out with fisheries restoration. And so that we have that asset here. We're fortunate here in the Northwest. But what you'll see happen in stepping away from or stepping toward greener energy sources, battery technology comes into play. All of our cars may become that energy source to store the day's energy from the sun.
Well, thank you. This is a group of questions that are very specific in a sense, so they might not take as long to answer. They're not quick fire, though, necessarily. So we'll start with, that would be Danielle, I think, is next. The idea of gun control and guns in school to protect. What is your stand on that?
I'm lifetime NRA member, retired law enforcement, and founding member of Idaho's Second Amendment Alliance. So I am strongly pro-Second Amendment, shall not be infringed. Guns in schools, that was part of some legislation that I wrote. All local school districts have the right and the option to have their staff armed. And so that's a local issue. And I do believe, as former law enforcement, that we have to harden our targets. We have to make sure our children are protected, because we send our precious assets there every day, and we need to make sure that they're safe.
So just to clarify, the question wasn't about the Second Amendment, because that is an amendment in the Constitution. It's really about different kinds of gun ways to control gun ownership, just gun control in general, to make it safer.
I believe that it shall not be infringed. I oppose gun control.
Thank you. And Scott Herndon, same question.
When we have shootings in schools, obviously terrible tragedies, we're always motivated to look at what are the causes of that. And a lot of times the call will be for gun restrictions. So, for example, maybe it's a problem of higher capacity magazines, or maybe we need to get rid of bump stocks after the Las Vegas shooting and those sorts of things. But I think as long as we have the Second Amendment, that isn't going to be the answer. You would have to have a constitutional amendment, which I would oppose, because I think actually guns are a balance against federal It's against government overreach. I think the real problem, if you look at the commonality of all the shooters, has to do more with pharmaceutical medication, suicide, mental health issues. And so I think that's actually where we need to be looking. When you look at pharmaceuticals, there's suicidal and homicidal ideation. And so also I do think we need to harden the targets. So if we have security at schools, then, and it's armed security, and it's not just visible, but it could be invisible security, then I think that's going to help to not have gun-free zones and have actual good guys with guns to counter those situations. But I think the mental health issue is the big one.
Thank you. and Jim Woodward the same question. It's the question of, should we have stricter gun controls? And what about guns in school?
I sure struggle with this one, but I think that like a lot of other problems we face, we oftentimes try to fix the symptom and not the cause. How have we gotten to the point that people think that attacking someone else with a gun or with any other method, you know, people take a vehicle and drive up on the sidewalk and run people down. How have we gotten there that's an answer for some people? So I think we need to look at ourselves a little harder. I'm just not an advocate of social media. I get a little grief on this campaign, actually, because I'm not out on Facebook as much as others. Social media means to me social, and so I'm providing people a little bit of a picture of myself. But I think that when you look at those means we have now of attacking others through social media and these one-way conversations, that's not productive for society, and it's not helping us. So direct answer, no, I just don't really actually think that guns are the mechanism. The problem is different.
Okay, thank you, Jim Woodward. We're going to be running out of time shortly here. We're going to squeeze in one more question, then we're going to come back and give you about a minute each to wrap up. And if you can stick to 30 seconds for this one, we'd appreciate it. I think, Scott, you already spoke to this, but we'll start with you anyways. What is your position on the proposed silicon smelter in Newport?
Well, I think we're concerned because it could have a potential impact on the health and the air in our environment. And so my position, the state legislature doesn't currently, we're not in a position to say anything about it because it's in Washington state. But I think we need to have a seat at that table. And I think we need to be very concerned about our air quality. And I think we want to have a say in that at the state level. So we need to make sure that that happens.
Okay. Jim Woodward, same question to you. Do you have a position on the smelter in Newport?
I live downwind from that area, that proposed siting. And so, yes, I have concerns, but there aren't any facts to work on right now. Until there's an application in place, there's nothing to look at, just speculation. So we have to get to that point first.
Okay, thank you. Danielle Ahrens, same question.
Well, per the 10th Amendment and states' rights, it is in Washington, so it's a Washington project. But if and when it crosses over and becomes an issue for the constituents here, then yes, I will address it. I've talked to the governor and the head of DEQ about it. They're both very involved in watching it, and so we're monitoring the situation.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we're about the end of our time. We would like to give you about 1 minute each to make a closing statement. And why should folks vote for you on May 15th when we come to the primary election? And Jim Woodward, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm tied to the community here. I think everybody knows that. And that's why I'm here. I'm not looking for a career in politics. Just asking to take my turn in what I call public decision making, not politics. My focus will be on the business of the state. Let's take care of the day-to-day business, education, transportation. We can get hung up on ideological differences sometimes, but hopefully we still have enough room here in Idaho. We can spread out and not get too mad at each other, but take care of our common projects that we do at state government.
Thank you, Jim. And Danielle, your closing statement.
I'm Danielle Ahrens, and I would like to have your vote to serve as your state senator. I am passionate about serving you. I have deep community roots and a large family up here and a very good history of serving the community. So my goal is to represent North Idaho and go down and be your voice in Boise and make sure that you have a voice. Thank you.
And Scott Herndon.
Okay, and I am Scott Herndon, and there's so little time, so I'll just recommend people check out my website, which is herndon4idaho.com. But I'm 50 years old. I have a lot of experience in finance. I think that's one of the critical things that we need more of in the legislature. We're spending 6-9% growth in our Idaho budget. I think we need to cut that back to the growth of the actual economy and the growth of personal incomes. And I think we need constitutional watchdogs down there. It benefits all of us, improves all of our individual liberty. It's not a partisan thing, because when we have constitutional watchdogs, it helps everybody who, if we have an ideological spectrum that goes from left to right, it serves everybody on the left, everybody on the right, and everybody in the middle. So when we take that oath, I'm going to definitely be one of those ones who's going to be a watchdog over that constitution for everybody in our district.
Well, thank you, Scott Herndon. I just want to remind our listeners that this is the seat that is currently held by Sean Keough. It's District 1 Senate seat. And these are the Republican candidates that we just heard from: Daniel Ahrens, Jim Woodworth, and Scott Herndon. I also want to remind our listeners that it's an important part of what we do here in this country is vote. And the vote is May 15th. And on May 8th, there is a forum being held by Sandpoint Online, the Sandpoint Reader, and KRFY. It's at the high school. It starts at 5:30, and that is a Tuesday night. It's 1 week before the election for the primary. We also want to remind you that tomorrow on the morning show, it's Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. And I currently at this point do not know who their guests will be, but you can always tune in and find out. And next week, our guests will be the candidates for Bonner County Assessor. That's Donna Gao, Dennis Engelhardt, and Richard Miller. So you can tune in again next week on Wednesday for more Local Decision 2018 primary. Anything else you want to say, Chris?
Nope. I think you covered it, Susie. And thanks for listening. I think we're going to go out with a song here.
And just in, actually, Danielle thought of this, a Beatles song, and I came up with Here Comes the Sun, because I think we're in for some sunshine. We hope you have a beautiful day. And remember, tomorrow at 4, no, I mean on Friday at 4, I will be speaking with Holly McGarry here live in the studios. I just want as many people to listen because she is so fun and she's got such a great voice and style. So here it is. Here Comes the Sun, the Beatles. Have a great day.